Edward had felt guiltily glad to be going back to work. He had known it would be a sad Christmas without Bobby, but he'd pinned his hopes on David coming downstairs. Sister Heaton, who had been looking after him for the first few weeks at home, had been very firm that he must aim for that. And he had seemed to improve under her stimulating briskness. Now she was gone, he seemed to be sinking into a slough of despond. Edward did not know what to do to reach him, and it troubled him to feel so helpless. At least at the bank he knew what to do. At least there, problems had solutions. When he went down to breakfast, he was surprised to find Beatty dressed to go out. He'd been sleeping in the dressing room for some time now. From the beginning of the war, she had been withdrawing from him, and the consecutive blows of Bobby's death and David's wounding seemed to have shattered the delicate web of connections between them. When she looked at him, her eyes passed over him blankly, as if he were a stranger. It was worse in its way than his inability to help David, for it meant that each of them had to bear their grief alone. To pretend that things were normal seemed to be all that was left to do, so he said,
"Good morning, my dear. You're up early."
"I'm going up to town," she said, sipping coffee. He poured himself some. It seemed distressingly weak.
"I wish you'd speak to Cook about the coffee," he said.
"Williamson's couldn't fill the last order," said Beatty. "We only had a little left, so I told her to make it last."
"I'd sooner have it less often and have it strong," he said.
In some places he'd heard they were eking out coffee with ground acorns, or the French subterfuge, chicory root. The notion made him shudder. What was civilization if a man could not have a proper cup of coffee at breakfast time?
"I'll do without coffee after dinner if necessary."
"I'll tell her," said Beatty. She still had not looked at him.
"What takes you to town?" he asked carefully.
Now she looked up, but her eyes did not meet his. "The canteen. There are soldiers on leave coming and going, and I thought I'd call on Diana. It was her first Christmas away from us. I did hope they would at least drop in," she added.
"I expect the snow put them off," Edward said. "Driving would have been difficult."
"The trains were running," Beatty pointed out. It made Edward smile.
"I can't imagine our son-in-law travelling all this way on the Metropolitan line. Not now he's Lord Dean."
That did at least attract her attention. "It's so strange that she's Lady Dean, when we thought all that was over and done with." Diana had been engaged to Rupert's older brother Charles, but he'd fallen in France. Edward said,
"I admit I was worried when she accepted Rupert. Seemed too hasty. Perhaps a wartime thing. But they seem happy enough. If the magazines are anything to go by, they're seen everywhere together."
"I think she's outgrown Northcote," Beatty said. "London's her playground now." Ada came in with the tray. Cook appeared on her heels.
"If you was going up to town, madam, and happened to be passing any shop," she began wheedlingly.
"What is it you want?" Beatty asked.
"Well, madam," she hesitated.
"Coffee?"
Edward suggested with faint acerbity.
"Oh, no, sir. There was a message came with Williamson's boy just now," she replied. "They're getting some in today and they'll send it up later."
"What then?" Beatty asked impatiently. Cook took the plunge.
"Suet, madam," she blurted.
"Suet?" Beatty's eyes shot up.
"Oh, you can't expect me to walk about London clutching a lump of suet." "Oh, no, madam, perish the thought. They do it ready prepared now, shredded, in nice clean cardboard boxes. Just if you was to happen to pass a grocery shop and it wasn't any trouble."
Beatty sighed.
"Very well. How much?" "As many as I'll let you have, madam, or as many as is convenient to carry," said Cook humbly. "You just never know what's going to be missing in shops nowadays. There doesn't seem to be no sense to it. Only the other day—"
"Thank you, Cook," Beatty interrupted.